Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Big Show. I'm Jeff Gamet. I am your interim host, and here we are with another summer fun edition, which is going to be awesome because all of us decided to prepare basically as the show was starting. So we are living up...
This second.
We are living up to our expected standards. So... Mm-hmm. Go us. I haven't given Ewan Rankin a shout out in a while. So I'm just going to do that. Ewan, we are doing our best to hold down the fort while you are taking care of all the other things that you have to deal with. Hopefully there will still be a figurative building standing when you're ready to come back and join us. And when you do, hopefully you remember where all the little buttons are to make everything happen. So Ewan, miss you. We have awesome people here today, and let's just start off with Patrice. How are you today?
I'm okay. I'm not gonna lie, it's been a bit of a rough day. I mean, the weather didn't help. It was kind of all over the place. I heard there was like a big storm in Austria, and parts of Austria apparently are without power.
Wow.
And the train service in like three states is completely shut down and stuff because they don't have power, all of that. So fun day. No, but I'm okay. Like I'm very happy it's Thursday. I'm very happy to do the show. Mm-hmm. And I'm very happy that tomorrow is already Friday.
Yes,
it was a short week, to be fair. Like we had one of those infamous public holidays again.
Right. As I recall, it's St. Patrice Day, mm-hmm. in honor of you.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was good. Like I had a lot of fun and really relaxed, nice weekend, went to Vienna, all of that. It was really good. I discovered new areas of Vienna. Found like a really nice area where there is an apartment, and if I had the time or the money already, then I would move there, but I need another couple of months. There's some other expenses coming up that are more important right now.
Mm-hmm. No, I get that. It's that ridiculous thing about having to be responsible with mm-hmm. Where you're spending your money,
being a grown-up. Terrible, isn't it?
Yep. Exactly.
Yep. And that beautiful voice you heard is Ian. Ian, how are you?
I'm very well, beautiful. I've never been called that before, but never mind. Yeah, I'm great. Back from last week, I was off doing other stuff. Inconsiderate Americans that work at different clocks. I've got a clock different to mine, so I have to work late in the evening. That's all I can say. But there we go. It's fair enough. These things happen. I work for an international company. These things happen. And I'm back again this week and looking forward to it. I've been teaching this week a bit, but getting back into the swing of doing stuff like that, really enjoying myself. So, yeah.
Well, it's
books
great
today,
that you're
then. Back. Books then today. So that should be fun. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes. So, what Ian was referring to is the topic for today. So, since we're doing Summer of Fun, which I give Patrice full credit for inventing retroactively, and other podcasts started doing this a few years ago, but that's only because they had the ability and the foresight to pick up on what Patrice's plan was and just roll with it a little bit ahead of us. So the idea is that instead of trying to come up with a bunch of news stories each week during the summer, because it's slower and we don't have the same target rich environment for interesting and fun news stories that we have fall through spring. So instead, what we're doing is picking a single topic and then talking about that, and hopefully it will be something fun and interesting. So this week's topic is favorite books, and I am looking forward to seeing how Patrice and Ian spend my money on books that I didn't realize that I actually need.
Yeah, I'm getting my credit card and my Audible account ready because there will be so many.
Yeah.
And you know, I actually really streamlined my selection because I know it would be easy for each of us individually to go on for well over an hour with just some favorite picks, and it would easy. Not be a complete list. So trying to fit in books from all three of us, I figured, you know, I need to really narrow this list down. Yeah.
I mean, I just did it while you were doing the introduction, and it wasn't even hard because it's my top three or four. Easy.
Yeah, and so what I tried to do was pick some favorites from multiple genres.
Same.
Yeah.
So I'll go ahead and start.
Okay.
And my first pick for a favorite book is Andy Weir's latest novel, Project Hail Mary.
Yes. That was on my list too, and it was number four and number five, and I was like, okay, Jeff is going to pick it anyway. I'll it's fine.
Well, Patrice, there are books that I took off of my list because I'm sure you're picking them.
We'll see about that. No, it's a great book. Like I'm 100% with you. I mean, the guy who wrote The Martian, And The Martian is a great book, but in my opinion, this one is better. And
I agree.
And better and lesser known for some reason. I don't know why.
Well, I think it's because compared to The Martian, it's still a relatively new book. I mean, it came out, like a year ago? A little over a year ago?
Yeah, about. Yeah, yeah. I think there's a secondary reason. There is a big fascination with Mars right now. Like because of SpaceX, because of NASA and all of that.
Yeah.
And this like Project Hail Mary is more a, I would say, general science fiction book. It's not about Mars. It's about some other science fiction. And I don't think that appeals to to as many people as Mars does.
I think you're right. I think there might also be at least some people that are a little bit leery of jumping into this book because his second book, which was a heist story that takes place on the moon, it was a great premise, but it just wasn't as strong a book as The Martian.
Yeah, and I really haven't read any of his books, and so I want one to pick it. I was thinking I was going to have a go at The Martian, and I've never quite got around to reading it. And this sounds quite good fun, to be fair. I'm now swerving between: do I add it to my Audible credits? Do I add it onto my Audible thing, like my remaining credit that's kicking around at the moment, waiting to be used, or do I dip in, or do I pay a fiver for it? And I might pay a fiver for it on Kindle, and then I can pick it up some point. You've cost me £5 already, then. That's one to begin with.
Ben is asking how anyone can surpass The Martian, and Ben, my answer to that is it took Andy Weir to top an Andy Weir book, and instead of spoiling anything in the book for you, I will just simply say you need to read Project Hail Mary, and you will very quickly, you don't even have to get all the way through the book before you realize that this is a stronger book than The Martian.
It is really smart. I mean, I said we're not going to spoil it, but I think we should at least like give people an idea or a starting point. And I mean, it's basically a scientist wakes up somewhere, doesn't remember his name, doesn't remember anything, realizes he's on a spaceship somewhere. Doesn't like the other crew died, and is kind of trying to figure out what's going on, and there is a whole twist in that book, and I'm not gonna say more about that.
I love the way you describe that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's maybe one sentence more. It turns out he's trying to save Earth, because that's also in the text, like you can read that.
Yeah, I think so, that's in the yeah.
Thank you. So that's, I think, fine. There you go. I spent five yeah. pounds now.
Yeah, but that's about it. It's really great. It's really great. And when I say it's science fiction, I mean that in a literal sense. There is fiction and there is science.
There's a lot of science in this. Yes.
Yeah, which is, I mean, you would expect. I mean, you know, the person who gave us sciencing the shit out of something
mm-hmm.
is writing another book. So.
Yep. Yes. And I love that, just like in The Martian, he explains why the science that's happening is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens here in yeah. Project Hail Mary as well.
Yeah, I've heard some people had some issues with some aspects of the book because he did yada yada jump over a couple of things and speed it up like unrealistically. But it's fiction. That's the fiction part.
That's the joy of fiction. Right?
Exactly.
And how big is the book going to be if yes. he doesn't take a few liberties along yes. the way?
On time mostly, like so. Mm-hmm. As I said, it's a really great book, and I wow. like, the funny thing is, I have certain books that I go back to like once or twice a year, mm-hmm. and I mean, as I said, I think it came out last year, and I've listened to it at least like three or four times already. It's that good.
Mm.
Nice. I bought it in hardback when it came out, and my hardback copy is making the rounds between friends and family.
Oh, nice. That's great. Yeah, Ben is saying if it wasn't all realistic, everyone would be dead about 20 pages. And not quite, but close enough.
Basically.
We don't. Realism, yeah. No, that's for the dogs anyway. We don't yeah. need realism.
Yeah. So I'm gonna go with my number one all-time, constantly referred to, constantly recommended, I post it everywhere book. And that is The Subtle Art of Not Giving an F. You can fill in the words.
I've read that. That's a very good
choice.
It is. So the idea behind it, without giving, I mean, this is not like, it's not a science fiction, it's not a fictional book, it's a non-fictional book. The idea behind it, I really agree with. Like, basically the author is saying, you have a limited number of Fs to give, or a number of spoons in your life. Your life is finite. You can only give this much. And you should really think about what you give an F about. That's the basic thing. There is so much more in this book. And the funny thing is that this is another one of the books I go to like twice a year. And last time I was listening to it, like a month ago, I want to say, mm-hmm. there is a whole section about people and relationships. And that wasn't, it's really funny. I've listened to this, I have it on Audible. I've listened to this, and I have it actually also on hard copy. I have both. I've listened to this, as that, many, many times. This book has been around for quite a while. I've listened to it many, many times.
I was looking and back only at it recently.
Yeah, only recently did I connect the dots on what he was saying, because I could apply it to my own experience. It's that good. Like, after years, you can still get something out of it. It's the number one book I recommend to any new employee I have.
And I didn't realize until just now, it's part of a set.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I've been
the second book in the set is Everything is Fucked.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's actually, this is newer, and this is still on my list. It's one of the next books. I've already bought it, and the next book I'm going to read. Yeah, this is super relevant to anything we do. And you can apply it however you want, and he really explains it really well. Like, it's not just like one of those surfer dude whatever books. Like, the title you might think whatever, like, basically he's telling me not to give an F about anything. No, that's not what he's saying. He's just saying, pick what you care about. Don't fight about things that you cannot influence or change. Yes. fight with like care, and fight for the things that you can.
That in itself is a wonderful message for anyone trying to co-parent children that have that have got stepkids.
Yeah.
That the idea of not micromanaging the hell out of them because it just doesn't work, and you pick your battles, you pick your stands, and that works so much better. And I read his book, I probably read his book 5-6 years ago, I must have done. And then I was sort of picking through it and thinking, I recognize this for some things I do, and some other little bits I've added to it. And yeah, really, it is a very, very good. Yeah. I think I might chuck that on one of my Audible reads in a while's time for something to listen to while I'm walking. It's a good one.
It is a really good book. There's the one thing, as I said, that I took away recently was he was talking about people who make their problems other people's problems, and about people who gladly take that on and try to solve other people's problems and are very happy to do so, and how and why this is not working. And as I said, I felt so seen because I'm the person who's constantly taking on other people's problems. And once you realize that, and once you also see when you might maybe make your problem like something that you care about and that you, like, because of your experience, maybe have a problem with. Like, I don't remember what the example was, but basically, like, I don't know, you don't like broccoli, and now all of a sudden, like, your partner cannot eat broccoli. Like, just picking an example. That's not your partner's problem. That's your problem. And you shouldn't, like, force another person to do that. And as I said, I felt so seen, and that's part of that, to say, yes, like, sometimes... I mean, it's okay to help, and it's okay to care about someone else. You shouldn't be just all selfish, but don't make your problem someone else's problem. So that's also in there. Really good book.
Well, I'm going to go for a classic that I've loved forever, I revisit every year, and that's Lord of the Rings.
Oh, yes. I thought about that one.
I read Lord of the Rings once a year. I quite often, particularly in the autumn, because it fits nicely with the story, that's a great time to read it. And when often walking, I'll listen to the BBC dramatised all three books. And it's utterly fabulous. Full cast actors, recorded in the early 70s. They've edited out bits where it was, to be fair, Tolkien going off in mad, and Tom Bombadil. Tom Bombadil being the classic thing where no one really needs Omadillo, Tom Bombadillo, and all that carry on, really. So that one went away. But Lord of the Rings itself, wonderful, wonderful set of stories. Mm-hmm. If you want to learn where all the fantasy writers got their ideas from, there you go. This is whose homework they're all cribbing.
Oh yeah. And if you want to know where he master. And if you want to know where he got it from, go to Birmingham.
Yeah.
It's literally like you see basically the Shire there.
Yeah, that's true, actually. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of his other sort of things he's picking on Norse mythology, Greek mythology, and his knowledge of all those kind of things to build together the myths and legends that make up the kind of your orcs and your elves and all those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
It's lovely, lovely, lovely thing to read. I mean, even The Hobbit is great. I mean, it's all...
Yeah, the book Hobbit, is great. Don't watch the movie.
No, go nowhere near the movie. It was never intended to be 4 hours long and five movies.
No,
it
was only 250 pages, children's book in four movies. Yeah.
It's a small children's book that's very, very lovely and well worth a read and thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyable.
And The Hobbit was the starting point. Like, this is the book he wrote, and then that spun into Lord of the Rings.
He wrote that for his kids.
Yeah, exactly.
He wrote The Hobbit for his kids, and then at the end of the Second World War, and if you look closely in the parallels of some of the arcs of the way the story goes, you can see he's talking about his fears and his views and how the world changes. Some of its language. It's very hard work if you've never read it before. Some of its language, you'll probably wince a little because you're a modern human rather than one that was around the 1930s. To be honest, go with it because it's a thing of its time. It's not something written now no one should sanitize it for today. It should just be written as it, and it's not. There's nothing terrible, but
no.
The only thing is, it would fail any kind of Bechdel test ever in any kind
oh,
of
yes.
format. There is, you can forget girls. They're only really there as decoration.
There's some exceptions,
there are,
but
there
for
are
the
some
most part,
but for the most
there's
part,
some
yeah.
exceptions, but for the most part,
yeah,
yeah.
For the most
it's
part,
mostly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all men going places and stuff.
Yeah,
so.
And places and conquering and yeah, and all the, yeah, anyway, that's
yes,
what we want.
And doing all of the manly things.
Yeah, but it's a thing written of an era. Although one thing that's, I think, quite lovely that the films managed to capture and the books managed to capture is, particularly between the hobbits, there's an instinctive love and companionship between mm-hmm. the friends that yep. you see in the film and you read in the books that yep. was communicated. And that's mm-hmm. one very much of not of that today's world doesn't quite allow two men to have that same kind of relationship almost in a way without them looking at them. Are you gay? No. It's just my friend. Well, I've been my friend forever.
It should, but
they hold hands. They hold, I mean, things like holding hands, things like, and the way they, there's a lot of those things which are lovely and of their place and are very, very nice. And I still will continue to love that forevermore. So I've got a couple more modern things to come next, but we'll start with my probably my favorite book.
No, I'm with you.
Then that's a great lead in to my next pick. You know, the whole thing about deep friendships and being able to express those, also coming of age, so that makes my next pick Ghost World by Daniel Clowes. So this was turned into a movie or adapted into a movie at one point with Scarlett Johansson and oh my god, I forgot the other actress's name, but anyhow, it was supposed to be the big breakout movie for the other actress because Scarlett Johansson's character is the best friend. And Scarlett's character or Scarlett the actress, of course, she really took off after that. But the premise is you have these two teenage girls, and it's kind of this coming of age thing where both of them have very different ideas on life and the world compared to many of the other people around them. And they're getting ready to go to college, and there's all these weird and idiosyncratic people that they're intersecting with, and it's just it's a wonderful story.
Do you mean Thora Birch? Is that the actress?
Yes,
Enid. Yeah,
yes,
known from. Yeah, from The Walking Dead, for example.
Like, yeah. Okay. Yeah. After Ghost World, she kind of disappeared or fizzled out for a little while. And then in recent years, she's been getting back into acting again.
Yeah, there's definitely a gap. Like there's a few things here and there, but nothing major.
Oh, good. I can't find it.
So now Ghost World is a graphic novel. And I point that out not because I see it as a problem, but because there are some people when they pick up a book and they open it and it's not just pages and pages of text that it catches them off guard.
Yeah, I mean, totally understandable. If you're expecting a book with text and you're getting a graphic novel, then that's, I mean, not a problem, but it's unexpected, let's put it this way. So
now you
if you know
it
before, it's not a problem.
If you're talking about good graphic novels that are not the usual superhero fare, and current and modern, and talking about friendships and everything else, Heartstopper by Alice Oseman. TV series just recently done massively well on Netflix.
Oh, okay.
And
that's the one.
And there's a lady called Alice Oseman. She came to Harrogate and came to the Comic-Con just recently, and she was really, really good. My daughter, this is a This is going to be an Alice recommendation. This is my daughter. My daughter particularly loves this.
Oh, it's a series of graphic novels. Mm-hmm.
It is a series of graphic novels. Heartstopper. I really do recommend them. They are really, really very, very, very lovely about a gay couple and different trials and tribulations of teenagers of around the right of that. Again, I think of the similar age group to, again, your Ghost World one, which I'm going to tell you about the Ghost World one when I go back in the house. Mm-hmm. But yeah. Heartstopper, do have a look at those. Those are very lovely. If you enjoyed the Netflix show, jump into those. They're good fun.
So my next one goes into a completely different direction. So I'm going from nonfiction to... is it nonfiction? I would say fictionalized reality, maybe. it's Anthony Bourdain's Kitchen Confidential. It's the book that put him basically on the map. Basically, I mean, it's like, I mean, unfortunately, he died early.
Mm.
And when I say died, like he killed himself. At least that's what we know. he battled his demons like his entire life. He had like addiction problems and depression and all of that, and unfortunately that caught up with him. But this book is like, for me, as someone who really enjoys cooking and has friends as professional chefs and thought about, like, when I was like a teenager, I thought about that, oh, maybe I should become a chef. I'm still very happy that I didn't. I'm still very happy that I was smart enough to not do that. It's very hard work, and I didn't want to do that. But he basically, it's a like a more or less unfiltered view. And from, I said, fine, I know from my friends, like, they all love this book because it captures the realities very well. And he has some really good tips in that as well, like for people at home, like things like, do not make French fries yourself, or how to do a demi-glace at home, stuff like that.
Do not make French fries yourself.
Yeah, he says, forget that. Like royal French fries, if you want to do that at home, it's simply not worth the effort. Like go to a place that makes them like fresh and really well. Because the fat and so on that you would have to have, and it has to be changed all the time and all of that, and different temperatures and all of that. It's just economically not worth it at all.
The whole sort of thing with the double fried and everything else to get really nice.
Yeah. Or like the secret behind every good recipe is tons of butter in professional kitchens. That like nobody talks about, but it's tons of butter. And things like that. And I mean, but he has stuff like that. And then he also has his stories, like how he kind of stumbled, like I said, stumbled into this life of like working in a kitchen and kind of realized that was the only place he really fit in, with all the what he called misfits and drug addicts and whatever, like all of it. And I'm not saying everybody is like that. But that was his experience. It's Kitchen Confidential. It's a really good look at the professional world, and all the dirty secrets, like don't eat fish on a Monday. I'm not sure it's true everywhere, but like I think most places
because that's the weekend. Because it's the weekend's fish. I presume it's because of the weekend's fish.
Yeah, even if it was delivered on Monday morning, it's probably the weekend's fish from the fishmonger. It's like. Or the Friday's fish from the fishmonger. Things like that. Like he talks about like breakfast or brunch and like the most hated service in any restaurant. And nobody wants to do it. And it's basically just like the scraps that they have left over. Brunch like hates it.
Okay.
Eating at buffet, like eating at like buffet places where you have like a huge variety of food. Said, yeah, that's all the cheap stuff that they have in the kitchen, because like what else do you do with it? You can hide really bad products really easily in that. Like clean out your fridge basically. Stuff like that. He has so many.
That's another things. £6 spent. I'm up to a tenner now. This has been an expensive evening so far.
It's
that looks like a good read. I enjoy
not
my
an expensive
food
evening,
food, yes.
An evening of investment.
Oh yes,
two new things to read that sound really really cool. I'll throw in. Oh, what was I going to go for now? Actually, I'll go back to. I'm going to go throw in kind of a genre and things I'm enjoying in that genre. I like the old urban fantasy sector of books. Jim Butcher, Dresden Chronicles being the classic of those ones, which are set in a reality that's basically now, but vampires and werewolves run around.
And so basically now? No.
So current world with
sometimes fairy, when you walk down the street, you're not so sure.
Characters
so.
And magicians and wizards and stuff, all kind of floating around in the general place of we
that's
are.
It. Where sometimes you walk down the street and you're not so sure about that.
Yeah, so the odd looking bloke on the street corner, it's a wizard that is, and the scruffy bloke that sleeps in the street, that's a druid. You know, but it's. There's been a few of those I've really enjoyed that have been super fun and were a good way to spend a few afternoons. The Dresden Chronicles is massive, and I can recommend those highly. There's one series called Iron Druid that's written by a guy down somewhere near you, I think. He's Jeff, I think he's either Austin or Colorado way, you know, is. And
quite a difference, Austin.
It's somewhere west.
He might be in this state. Who knows?
Where is he? Iron Druid.
It's kind of like saying it's either Tunisia or like London.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a guy called Kevin Hearn, and he has a character that's a druid. He's thousands of years old. You kind of see him traveling through the world and various bits and pieces, and he's friends with all manner of gods and things. And the humanity in the here and the funniness, and there's some good humor in them. Mm-hmm. So I enjoyed those because they were not afraid to take the mickey out of themselves. Jim Butcher with all of the Dresden Chronicles.
It's Dresden Files, not Dresden Files, Chronicles.
Files. Mm. Jim Butcher.
Okay.
Okay. Those have been around for years.
Which was turned into a TV series.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I can't remember if it sucked or not, but those are the ones. And let me just chuck that in here. So there's the first one, Stormfront. Those are really great fun. I mean, he really started that genre off. It was Jim Butcher that really sort of started this whole kind of subset of nonsense off.
I found the complete box set. Books 1 through 12 on Amazon. So I dropped a link to that.
And there's plenty of those on the Kevin Hearn stuff. He's got a new one coming out soon as well. And there was one other author I was going to mention, which was called Harbinger. And there was a whole, and it was where are there's a, oh, there's far too many books called Harbinger. Typical.
Let's go on with Jeff and maybe come back to that.
Yeah, no, I'll find something else. But there's a couple of good things to go out. I'm Druids and
I'm really excited to share my next book, but I'm also excited to tell everyone that we're supported by TSO Hosts. And they're awesome because without TSO Hosts, we would not be able to bring content like this to you every single week, nor would we have a place to host the website and the file so that you can watch and listen at your leisure. So what they're asking of us is super simple. Just go out on social media, give them a thank you for being here to support the British Tech Network. Super easy to do. Now, since what their thing is to provide web hosting and help people buy domains, you know, great, because that fits with what we need. And they're amazingly generous. That generosity extends even farther than giving us the resources that we need. They're also giving you discounts. So if you want to go and set up a new website and have it hosted, hit them up for that. If you need to buy a domain name, hit them up for that. And use the discount code BTN20 when you check out, and you're going to get a nice discount on their services. So thank you to TSO Hosts for being here and supporting us. All right. So now my next pick goes to, and this is actually one of my favorite books of all time. And that's Breakfast of Champions by Kurt Vonnegut. And I'm a huge Kurt Vonnegut fan. And of course I've read, as a big fan, I've read all of his novels. And as new stuff comes out from his unpublished archives, I'm always jumping on that too, because any chance to devour words that came out of Kurt Vonnegut's mind, how can I not? What I love about Breakfast of Champions is that for me, as a teenager, when I read this book, it just profoundly changed how I perceived literature. And then the actual story, which to me is just so clever, it's this author, and he has all of these characters, and he sets his characters free so that they can explore their own lives instead of being trapped in the narratives he creates for them. And Ben is asking in the chat room, a book about Wheaties? Ben, there's definitely a correlation there, and I'm not going to ruin it for you. So if you have not read any of Kurt Vonnegut's works before, this is like an amazing place to jump in. Even though there's earlier works like Cat's Cradle and Slaughterhouse-Five and God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater. And yes, I can go on and on. But this book is just a great blending of all of these characters and their ultimate release to go and live their own lives.
And the audiobook is read by John Malkovich.
Holy crap.
That's awesome.
Ooh, I've added that one to my list, that one. I might look at that one as an audible then, because you've intrigued me for an audible. That might be a nice audible.
It's a wonderful story. The description that they have about the book on Amazon's webpage, it's a great description of the book, and what I offered as a description actually fits nicely with the printed description on Amazon. But anyhow, Kilgore Trout is one of Kurt Vonnegut's characters, who is a writer, and he even did wrote a book that he released as authored by Kilgore Trout, and that's called Venus on the Half Shell. And so Kilgore Trout has some issues, and it's pretty obvious in Breakfast of Champions.
Nice. So I decided I'm going to switch away from nonfiction, because I have another nonfiction book on my list that is my top three, but I'm going to change genres and go into the fiction realm. And it's an entire book series. It's the Expanse book series.
See, this all is why it's not on my list.
Good.
Because I all nine of them. Yours.
Like, doesn't even matter which one you pick up. Like, all nine of them are awesome. I mean, I would recommend start at one, go to nine, like, to all of them. I mean, it's the move at the TV show is really great, and the actors are great, and the writings and everything's great about it. The books add some dimension and some details on that, and some things that you simply couldn't do as easily on the show. And it also has three extra books, because the TV show ended after book six, basically. Six seasons, six books, more or less. It's one of my all-time favorite TV shows. It's one of my all-time favorite book series. And I mean, we had this whole discussion about the possible futures. And if you haven't listened to that big show, then you should go back to that one, because we did reference it. And I still think this is the most realistic description of a possible future where, I mean, we go into the universe. I mean, first our old solar system, and then in later books they actually go out in the universe. And it's I think the most realistic from today's standpoint. I mean, we will see, but it's just really good.
It's a wonderful series. I am currently reading book 8.
Okay.
And
that's a really cool one.
I can't say things because I don't want to give spoilers. But yes, Patrice, I'm with you. I'm really enjoying the book, and I'm just loving the way that that they're addressing the fact that these characters are getting older.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one of those books where it's not, I mean, you know, in Star Trek for the most part, I mean, and now like a recent like Picard series, they addressed it a little bit further, but for the most part, people get older and nothing changes. And in Expanse, that's not the case. Like all the, especially all the shenanigans and the adventures and the issues that they've gone through, they change them, and not just emotionally and like from like the person, but also physically. Like they have to deal with injuries that they got decades earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, as I said, I think from like it's simply, while it is science fiction and there are some fiction elements, like aliens, there is a lot of realism in that. And I really like that.
Yeah. And I like that since they do deal with alien technologies, that they deal with them in a way that feels pretty realistic, meaning they may have found ways to exploit technologies,
mm-hmm.
but that doesn't necessarily mean they understand the technologies.
Yeah, or that it's always exploited.
We don't get the explanation as the reader either. So there are things that just stay mysterious.
Yeah. Or that it's exploited for the good of the people. So like as it is even today, very often it's not. Like it's exploited for like someone's benefit, like a person or a group.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, as I said, it's just such a great series, and like I've listened to the entire thing twice already, and it's like the ending itself, and I'm not going to spoil it, the ending in itself, like the last whatever 5 minutes, are great and could be another book series. And as far as I know, the writers worked or had support from what's his name, J.R. Martin.
Game of Thrones guy.
Game of Thrones guy. Yeah.
Yeah, they worked with him on parts of Game of Thrones series.
Yeah,
exactly. Books.
Yeah. So and he supported them, like making sure that they got like all the details right and paid attention to all of it and kind of like proofread apparently a lot of things to make sure. Like it wasn't his story, but he helped them basically, giving them feedback on things that were missing or not clear or so on. Yeah, so yeah, it's just that all 9 books start with one.
Cool.
And the cool thing is the first book doesn't start with, oh, here are the characters and I'm going to introduce them and give them their backstory and all of that. No, we jump right into the action, and through what they're doing, you discover who they are over time.
Mm-hmm.
And I really enjoyed that.
I enjoyed that too. Yeah.
I'm gonna take a look at those when I've got some of the other ones, my other list.
So there's another whatever 90 bucks gone, right? Because it's about a tenner per book, probably.
Yeah, great. I shall look at.
It's actually cheaper to buy them in print. I dropped a link to the Dead Tree boxed edition, And it's $110 for all 8 books. So mm-hmm. yeah, it's actually a lot cheaper to buy them this way as mm-hmm. a whole set. And this would have actually saved me quite a bit of money.
Well, I didn't care.
Yeah,
I'm gladly giving them the money because the audiobooks are really, like, I like audiobooks for the most part, and they're really well made.
I'll have a look at that when I get another Audible credit, but something else to listen to. My next sort of recommendation is I was given this for Christmas. I'm a massive Bruce Springsteen fan. I've got tickets for the next concert, which is going to be touring the UK soon. Well, next year, in fact. And Bruce and Barack Obama recorded a series of podcasts a few years ago now, sort of talking about, I think, just about the time Trump was elected. And they're just talking about the world, two men, and about a similar, right? I mean, Barack's more near my age than I am Bruce's. But the parallels in the way they grew up, parallels in their lives. It was fantastic read, really, really interesting. They wrote some of his songs. And then it was interesting seeing sort of Barack talking about growing up in Hawaii and stuff and his family and his kids. I mean, I know precious little about him. So it was a real great opportunity to sort of just have a little dip into that. And I thoroughly enjoyed those and sort of things. Like he was talking about some of the harder speeches he's given and how he sort of, and you get the actual, in the hardback books, well worth having. Because in the actual book, you get sort of transcripts, handwritten transcripts showing you how, when they were composing the tunes, come out and writing the songs, and equally Bruce, and equally sort of Barrett's speeches, where he put his little edits in, no, take that bit out, that doesn't fit, I'll put this in instead. Really, really great. Highly recommend it. If you have any vague interest in either of those two men, I highly recommend it. It's real good. Bit of a, and it's not just all doom and gloom, isn't the world gone mad? It's all, it's also a bit of hope of, we can do this now, we can be better. And that's, there's a nice thing of that.
That's awesome. All right. And look, we still have time to fit another book in.
Right.
Okay. So I started with sci-fi for my genres. Mm-hmm. Then I went to graphic novel fiction. Then I went on to American literature. So I'm wrapping up.
With something Austrian? I don't know. Or German? I was thinking, like, what's missing on this list?
Actually, I'm not sure if Betty Edwards is... I don't know what country Betty Edwards is from, but she has an amazing book. And it's called Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain. So here's the deal. If you are an aspiring artist, this book is absolutely amazing and will help you, like, really develop your skills. If you are not an artist, this is a really great book to explore creativity and learn some drawing skills along the way. And it's not that expensive. It's like $18. And it's bigger than oversized paperback. It's like this big square thing. And I want to say like 250 pages. But it has all these really interesting, exercises. So it even goes beyond here's how to draw and here's how to think about things creatively, and it can almost be like a Zen thing, and for some people it's like a form of self-therapy to work through exercises in the book. So Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain.
I mean, that's a myth, but it still sounds like a great book.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yes, the concept of right brain, left brain this sort of thing. Yes, that's total bunk. But when you hear drawing on the right side of the brain, because of the bunk part, you get what she's trying to express with the title.
Okay. Okay, let's go with my what I had originally planned for nonfiction. So this book is more IT focused. It's IT focused nonfiction is the Phoenix Project. And it has nothing to do with Phoenix as the city. It's more about the bird, really, the one that comes out of the ashes. And it's a fictional story, but it tells real world, like it's a nonfiction book because it's about real world learning. So it's Gene Kim and the IT Revolution publisher. And this book is like they took like another really great author's idea of telling a fictional story, and through that story teaching people how to do certain things, or how to do IT work basically, and applied that to the IT world, DevOps and so on. And there's a really great story. Like it starts out with like, I mean, if you read the book, like if you work in IT, you will recognize your company probably. I mean, hopefully not. If you're really lucky, you're like, oh no, like this is completely wrong. Like we're not doing this. But I think most people will be like, oh yeah, we do that. Like we don't even know what work we have, and we don't know like how we prioritize things, and half of the shit we do, we don't even see, and all of that. But it's a really, really good story in itself. So even if the IT part wasn't super relevant for you or super interesting, it's just a really good story. It's about a guy working in, let's say, middle management. And he all of a sudden, because his boss gets fired, gets basically thrust into a leadership position. And he has help from an outside source, who basically takes him to like a production plant, because I think the company he's working for is a parts manufacturer, Parts Limited, like a car parts, I think, the manufacturer. And he takes him to the plant floor and shows him basically how they like the whole lean production like approach that I think a lot of companies these days are doing, how that works and how that applies actually to his work, and that IT work also is kind of production work, because you have inputs, you have outputs, you have bottlenecks, you have all of the same problems. And for me, that book is to this day very, very relevant. And I quote it quite often, and I read it quite often, and I really enjoy it every time. As I said, it's just a good story. But you learn a lot about like, okay, what are the four types of work that you do? And like, think about that. Like if you work in IT, what are the type, or in general, like at however, whatever the number is, what are the types of work? And there's unplanned work that you do not see, but that happens, that you cannot control even. And as I said, like there's the whole thing about knowing your bottlenecks and optimizing your bottlenecks, because any optimization that's not on your bottleneck is irrelevant, basically, is very, very relevant to IT work. And there's a couple follow-up books to this that are also relevant, but not as good. There's the Unicorn Project, for example. It's basically the follow-up book to this one. Yeah, but as I said, this Phoenix Project, I actually, when I was in Phoenix, I bought like 10 copies of them and distributed them in the office, because I was like, everybody here has to read them. As I said, and we were doing all of it, like all the issues that the company that there has, we have to. And I think that's quite common.
And let's give that a read. The top review in the UK, on the UK list for top reviews, I quite like the line. It's one line. This is how to write something which would normally come across as a very dry subject.
Yeah.
Because you can think, yeah, running IT, DevOps, oh God. Prepare for a snooze fest. And that, from what you've how you've described it, that sounds interesting way of dipping into that stuff without really having to go through all the pain.
Exactly, and that's why I said books. it's a it's a fictional book, a fictional story. So you have characters in there, and they, like they feel like a TV show or like a fictional book, like characters and their families and relationships and all like issues. But then it gets tied into something that's very real.
Very cool. I've heard of the book. I just didn't know what it was actually about. So yeah, there you go. So yeah, this day is costing me money too.
Yeah, I'm gonna give that a go myself.
Good.
And if we've
For you, Ian, it's super relevant because you work in like a really IT job.
I work in, I'm a very, very IT.
Yeah.
But here's something I've been interested in this year. It's a lovely series of books that the author keeps producing, which are, again, it's nonfiction. It's Maria Amaral. She basically recolors and retouches old photos. And so there's her most recent ones on A Woman's World, which has just recently come out, which is, I picked The Colour of Time because that was an interesting one as well. There's a where you can see women through the ages to look at a woman's world from 1950 to 1960, colorized now. So you, something about going from a black and white image to a color image brings it to life a bit more.
Yeah.
That thing of seeing a woman in an army uniform that was a WAF or whatever during the Second World War, suddenly that whole thing is life in color. Or there was a lovely picture, and I get an email from her with various things, and there was a beach scene from the turn of the century. And just seeing all the different characters and the things in that image was fascinating. And equally, the other one that I put in there, The Colour of Time, is a series of images and people through that, again, same time period. There's historical context written around them by Dan Snow, the historian, who's really good. He does a lot of TV and stuff. So it's very, very good. Really interesting stuff, just to give yourself another view, actually. And I should really recommend the Woman's World one as well, because I think that's equally very good. I'm going to have to get a copy of that one too. So there's a twofer there, because it's the same team. Really, really good. Interesting, Nice as a coffee table thing, or nice equally as a Kindle one to read, but really nice, but definitely really nice as a coffee table thing to dip in and out of.
Yeah, I mean, because of the photos, I would guess the coffee table is definitely better in this case.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Great. Now I have to get a coffee table.
I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, I don't like the trees.
All right.
For some things.
So this is great. We have cranked through so many interesting books.
Mm-hmm.
And my reading list, no surprise, got longer today.
Yeah. And thanks, Jeff, for posting all the links in the chat.
Oh, sure.
Because I forgot.
That's all right. I am at the ready. You drop a title and boom, I am ready to go find that link for you. So Patrice, where can people find you?
Well, first I'm going to tell people where they can find all the links. Because Figo forgot about that.
You know what happened, Patrice?
Yeah.
I did our thank you to TSO hosts and then jumped right back in and forgot about telling people where to find the chat. So I'm so glad you have my back.
So all the links to those books and also everything that we've talked about, there is a live chat for that. And live chat implies that you can talk to us live every Thursday at 7 p.m. UK time for the big show, and also every Friday 4 p.m. UK time for the Mac show. And if you want to, like, if you're listening to us live, then you can head over to chat.britishtechnetwork.com and talk to us live. Like Ben, for example, is doing. I see Dave actually. Hi, Dave. I see some Jeff Gemmett guy and some like Ian Grant guy and me as well and some
and
other
Patrice
people.
Girl.
Yeah, there's some people in there, which we are always grateful for. So head over to chat.britishtechnetwork.com and talk to us. But let's say you are listening to this after the fact in your favorite podcast player while whatever, driving to the grocery store. And there's this great book that Jeff mentioned, and I wanna have that. And I don't remember what it is. You can find the link still. It's super easy. Please stop somewhere in a safe place. Don't do it while driving. And then head over to britishtechnetwork.com/chat. And then there's a little calendar that pops up and you select today's date, which is the 18th of August, 2022. And there you will find everything we've talked about.
Thank you for doing that, Patrice. Thank you for remembering.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Okay. So now we'll pretend like this is flowing exactly the way it was supposed to. Patrice, where can people find you?
Well, you cannot find me at a random street corner in Austria, like Ben is saying in the chat. Instead, you can find me here every week on The Big Show on Thursdays. Also on Fridays on The Mac Show. There's another fun summer of fun topic coming tomorrow. So tune in for that. You can find everything I'm doing, all the social media links, the podcasts, the projects. If you want to buy me a coffee, there's a buy me a coffee link. All of that you can find on thepatrice.com. And if you want to listen to really interesting people talk about food and food-related memories and stories, I have an interview show called Foodie Flashback at foodieflashback.com.
Awesome. And Ian, where can people find you?
People can find me mostly here on The Big Show every Thursday. I come and talk crap with you lovely people. And when I'm not here, I usually find me on LinkedIn. It's probably the easiest place to find me. Look for Ian Grant on LinkedIn. You'll find it after old man there talking about Veeam. And that's what I do for a living, so that's fine. But yes, Ian Grant, that's me.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you both of you for being so awesome and for spending some of my money today.
Equally, I've spent money.
Yeah, both of you, you rock. Thank you to everyone that's here with us live right now and for everyone that's participating in the live chat. You are all awesome. And if it were possible, I would reach right through the microphone and give you all big hugs because you're just that fantastic. And for everyone that tunes in and watches or listens later, thank you for being part of the BTN family. We're so happy that you were here with us too. Thank you to TSO Hosts for being our sponsor and give them some online love, please. And don't forget the discount code BTN20 when you buy stuff from them. And, you know, I even though it'll go to his head, I need to give Mueller a thank you because he makes sure that we actually have people for each show each week. And that's absolutely fantastic. Let's see. Check out your Patreon subscriptions, PayPal subscriptions to the Daily News Show, and make sure that those are actually still active because something got screwed up and not everyone's money is coming in, and we need it to keep coming in. Otherwise, the Daily News Show ends at the end of August, and we don't want that to happen. Also, because apparently I can't do things in order today. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm Jake Hammond on both. Mac Voices Live on Tuesdays, In Touch with iOS on Thursdays, here on The Big Show, tomorrow on The Mac Show, and then also The Context Machine, youtube.com/jgamut for videos. And let's see, did I forget thanking anyone? Or
no, but I just wanted to say I'm very happy that I'm not the only one who's completely like brain dead today, so it's all good. For the news show, I mentioned that last week on the Mac Show. Kyle is a professional voice actor, voiceover artist. Mm-hmm. I think both actually.
Yeah.
And like if you listen to the show, like you can tell like he's really 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 good, and I know how much work it is, and he should get paid for it, and we gladly pay for it. But that means like we can only continue doing this and. Kyle can only provide this professional content if you go out and that even if you give a dollar, a pound, a yen, whatever it is, it will help because it goes 100% towards that. So please like support Kyle and as I said, listen to the content. Like you don't have to give the money like without listening to it. Like it's not a paid podcast. Like the podcast is free. You get it. You can listen to it and then give your money, please.
There you go. Yes. Wow. Okay. Hey, tune in tomorrow for the Mac Show because we're going to do more summer fun stuff. Don't forget to tune in next Thursday for the big show again. And everyone, have a wonderful weekend.